briefing is Galvan against NCO Portfolio Management. Mr. Sostrin.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tim Sostrin and I represent the plaintiffs. The Illinois Collection Agency Act strictly prohibits unlicensed debt collection in Illinois. The fundamental question before the court today is whether a debt buyer who purchases debts and then sues consumers to collect them engages in debt collection. There's no doubt that litigation is debt collection. The Supreme Court has said so in Hines v. Jenkins, and the Illinois Appellate Court has said so. The defendant's only argument is that since it hired an attorney to file its debt collection lawsuits, it is nothing but a passive debt buyer that did not actively engage in debt collection. This court should reject that distinction
for three reasons. When Sears tries to collect debts due to it on its own sales, is it a debt collector and all of its collection activities are void because it's not licensed?
No, because the Act explicitly exempts retail stores. The Act has never exempted debt buyers.
Wait a minute. Your view is that it is a debt collector, but that it has a separate exemption, or that it's not a debt collector?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Are we talking about Sears?
Yeah, Sears.
Sears is not a debt collector under the Act.
It's not a debt collector in the definition of the Act, but the definition, one you're relying on in 425-2, says that debt collector means any person who, in the ordinary course of business, regularly, on behalf of himself or others, engages in debt collection. And debt collection is a separately defined term. It means any act or practice in connection with the collection of consumer debts.
Right.
And on your view of the meaning of those things, Sears must be a debt collector.
Except for the fact that it is exempted in another section of the Act that says the following...
Exempted from the definition of debt collector or exempted from some of the statutory requirements laid on debt collectors?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that it's exempted entirely from the Act.
Where is the exemption?
2.03, and it says, quote, this Act does not apply to persons... And it lists whose collection activities are confined to and are directly related to the operation of a business other than that of a collection agency, and specifically does not include the following. And then it lists retail stores at number 9. But more importantly, Your Honor, there's aside from Section 2, there's another section of the Act, which is Section 3. And that Act explicitly states that that a corporation acts as a collection agency when it buys accounts, bills, or indebtedness and engages in collecting the same. So litigation is engaging in collecting the same. And the Act explicitly regulates also indirect debt collection. And it explicitly regulates litigation but exempts attorneys from the Act's requirements. So the only conclusion is that the Act is regulating the debt collectors who are filing the lawsuits. The second reason the court should reject this distinction is because the Illinois Appellate Court has already rejected it and held in the Trice case that a debt buyer who sued consumers after hiring an attorney and after purchasing the debts was engaged in debt collection and required to be licensed under the Act.
Before we get to that, counsel, I'm having real difficulty reconciling Section 3 of the Act, which... specifies that a person, association, partnership, or corporation acts as a collection agency when he or it, and then gives a laundry list of activities that constitute acting as a debt, or I'm sorry, as a collection agency, with the actual definition of collection agency, which is in 2.02, which is limited to entities that offer services to collect an alleged debt. I don't know what the interaction between those two is.
Well, when you're referring to Section 2 and looking at entities that offer services, I believe that's the pre-2008 definition. But in any case, the Act regulates...
Well, right, we've got two time periods here.
But the Act regulates entities that are engaged in debt collection, and even entities that attempt to engage in debt collection, even if they don't meet the requirements of Section 2. So, for instance, if you look at Section 14 of the Act, it specifically says that, quote, engaging in the collection of debts without first having obtained a license is a misdemeanor. Now, that section does not refer to the term debt collector or collection agency. Similarly, Section 4.5 says that any person who even attempts to practice as a collection agency shall pay a civil penalty if they don't have a license. And Section 3 is telling us when someone is acting as a collection agency, even if they don't meet the requirements of Section 2.
Right, but the statutory scheme is internally inconsistent because sometimes it uses this phrase engaging in the collection of debts, sometimes it uses the phrase engaging in debt collection, and sometimes it uses the phrase acts as a collection agency, and they don't match anywhere throughout. The duty of registration applies to collection agencies. Right.
Well, no, Your Honor. It doesn't apply only to collection agencies that meet the requirements of Section 2. Because, again, as I said, Section 14 says, quote, engaging in the collection of debts without first having obtained a license is a misdemeanor. And that section does not refer to the term collection agency or debt collector.
Yeah, but how do we reconcile that with Section 4? It says no collection agency shall operate in this state without getting a license. That suggests that we have to see if the entity in question qualifies as a collection agency under sub 2.02.
Right. Well, I think what Section 4 is a section of the Act that you would apply once you've already determined that an entity in question is a collection agency.
That's the registration duty.
Well there's several registration duties, but that Section 4 also says that no collection agency shall even engage in the indirect business of collecting. And clearly,
right, but it has to be a collection agency in order to trigger the registration duty. And if it's not a collection duty, then there's no registration. Or if it's not a collection agency, then there's no registration duty.
Well, I guess, Your Honor, the point that I'm trying to make here is that NCO Portfolio is a collection agency under Section 2, at least since 2008.
Since 2008?
But the
before
registration
that,
requirement,
not.
I believe, is not just in Section 4 because, like I said, the Act has other sections that say that an entity that even attempts to practice as a collection agency without being licensed shall pay a civil penalty.
If that's the penalty provision, that's not the substantive duty. So we have to reconcile this whole statutory scheme together. And it's very difficult because the Illinois legislature did not speak with perfect clarity and has amended this on an ad hoc basis a bunch of times. And so we've got to reconcile all these conflicting terms within the statutory scheme. The basic registration duty is in Section 4, correct?
I don't agree that Section 4 is the only section of the Act that imposes a registration duty. I think the other sections that I've cited also impose a registration duty. But the entire premise of this argument of passivity here is a fiction. As the plaintiff in its collection lawsuits, NCO Portfolio controlled the filing and course of its litigation. There's nothing passive about that.
Were you thinking because any entity, I guess, like Portfolio, that acquires someone else's debt and pays for it and now owns it, just by doing that, that's engaging in the collection of debts? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm not positing that just the purchase of debts is engaging.
Well, the ownership, you say, obviously they're going to do something with it. So does that imply something more?
The Act requires them to not only purchase it, but also engage in collecting the same.
But when you hire a lawyer to collect, is that engaging in it?
If the lawyer doesn't file a lawsuit, probably not. But the fact is that NCO Portfolio filed almost 3,000 lawsuits during the time period at issue here.
Because their name's in the caption, then that's it. Even though a lawyer is going forward with all of this.
As the plaintiff, they have fundamental, that is their lawsuit. And it's not just, we referred to attorney and we don't have responsibility anymore. This is a debt buyer whose sole business is to buy debts and then collect them. It doesn't collect them just by referring something to an attorney. They file lawsuits, and that is debt collection, as stated by the Supreme Court in Heitz v. Jenkins. And this court has also addressed, rejected similar arguments. In the Guberic case, this court considered a letter which was sent on behalf of a debt buyer by a third party and said that the debt buyer itself was responsible for the letter because it was sent on its behalf. And there was a question there about, was this letter sent in connection with the collection of a debt? And this, because that language is also in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And this court construed that language and applied it in the Guberic case and said, even though that letter made no demand for payment whatsoever, it was sent in connection with the collection of a debt. And because the only relationships the defendants had with the plaintiff arose out of the defaulted debt, and the purpose and context was debt collection. The same reasoning applies here. Litigation is the epitome of a demand for payment. And it doesn't matter that the pleadings had to be, by law, filed by an attorney. So I'd like to focus on the district court's decision to depart from the Trice case. No, the Illinois Supreme Court, nor any other Illinois court, has departed from the central holding of Trice, which is at issue here, which is that a debt buyer who sues consumers, engages in debt collection, is required to be licensed under the Act. We would respectfully submit that the district court erred in departing from that authority because there's no persuasive indication that the Illinois Supreme Court would have decided the case differently, which is what this court required in Commonwealth Insurance Company. The district court misconstrued the 2013 amendments to the Act as regulating debt buyers for the very first time. But even the defendants concede that this is wrong. After all, Section 3 has explicitly referred to corporations that buy accounts and engage in collecting them since the 1980s. And Trice had already ruled in 2011 that debt buyers were required to be covered. But the 2013 amendments didn't just solidify Trice's holding. It actually changed the law by exempting debt buyers from certain requirements, not all, but certain requirements of the Act. And the legislative history shows that the 2013 amendment was an initiative of the creditor's bar to, quote, clarify the definition and regulation of debt buyers, which had already been decided by Trice. So the 2013 amendment can't be read to imply that debt buyers were never previously covered. The district court also erred in relying on the statements of a single attorney, Dan Kelber, from the Illinois Licensing Department, which were given in a deposition in a separate case in which the plaintiffs here were not even parties and had no ability to cross-examine. So that's hearsay. But more importantly, he admitted that his opinion that, quote, passive debt buyers were not required to be licensed, he wasn't sure about it anymore because he could see a good argument that he was wrong, so he might change his mind about it. Now, that is not an agency interpretation that is worthy of deference by the court, especially in light of the unambiguous language of the Act that explicitly refers to entities that buy debt and engage in collecting it. Finally, I'd like to address or direct this court's attention to its decision in the Ruth case, where it rejected a very similar argument. The debt buyer in that case said that it didn't actively engage in debt collection because it hired others to collect debts for them. And this court rejected that argument and held that the debt buyer had taken, quote, affirmative conduct with regard to collecting the debt when it hired a third party to send dunning letters to consumers. This court should apply the same reasoning here. As the plaintiff in its lawsuits, NCO Portfolio had ultimate authority, responsibility, and control over its litigation, and the whole purpose was to collect payment. Now, that is affirmative conduct with regard to collecting, and that is active, not passive, debt collection. So I'd like to end there and reserve the remainder of my time if there's no questions.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Sharple.
May it please the Court, Brian Chartle on behalf of the defendants, NCO Financial Systems, Inc. and NCO Portfolio Management, Inc. Let's begin by acknowledging that the statute is not as clear as we would all like. What we do know, though, is that in order for the plaintiffs to win, they have to show that NCO Portfolio engaged in debt collection. That's required under the Section 2 definition of collection agency or under their Section 3 argument that we acted as a collection agency, which would require that they show that we engaged in debt collection.
Well, actually, that's true certainly after the 2008 amendments,
right,
because the definition of collection agency was amended to use that formulation. But it's a different sort of a question before
that.
And
I agree, Your Honor, that we're dealing with a situation where the statute has been amended, both Section 2 and Section 3, over time. I think the focus of their argument really has been after the 2008 amendment and whether or not they can sustain their burden of showing that NCO Portfolio engaged in debt collection under Section 2 or Section 3. And so that's what we're faced with. And I think their focus really is on whether or not we engaged in debt collection by filing collection lawsuits, NCO Portfolio, through its exempt attorneys. And so let's talk about that. They keep on bringing up this issue of this case law that supports their position. Your Honor, the case law that they're relying upon relates to the FDCPA, not the Illinois Collection Agency Act. And, for example, under the Hines case, which they keep referring to, the Supreme Court ruled that an attorney that files collection lawsuits under the FDCPA is considered a debt collector. The Supreme Court did not rule that a plaintiff or debt buyer in a collection lawsuit is considered a debt collector under the FDCPA and certainly not under the Illinois Collection Agency Act. So specifically, the issue before the court is whether or not NCO Portfolio, a passive debt buyer that has never sent collection letters, has never made collection calls, and has merely forwarded its accounts to a licensed Illinois collection agency or an exempt law firm at any point was required to be licensed under the Illinois Collection Agency Act from June 8, 2006 to June 28, 2011.
The attorney's exemption really isn't at issue here because we don't have counsel as a party. So, and I assumed or understood from the record that the attorneys to whom these files were referred for collection were acting as agents of the principal, right? So they're acting on behalf of LCO Portfolio to collect the debt.
And they're clearly exempt and not required
right,
to be.
Right, but that doesn't mean that LCO Portfolio is exempt.
Correct.
They can't take advantage of that exemption.
They cannot merely because the law firm is exempt. I agree with that, Your Honor. And so the question is, does NCO Portfolio act as a collection agency?
Right. It's not just buying this debt and holding it for its own sake.
No.
It's holding it to collect it.
But the ultimate issue before the court is whether or not they're required to be licensed. I mean, that's the ultimate issue. And so I acknowledge that the statute could be clear. But if
right,
we get
but
to
by buying this debt and
placing it with a law firm, do they engage in do they engage in collection?
Right, that's their business. They don't have any other business.
That might.
So we don't have the question of the exemptions.
Well, I think it would be more accurate to call them a debt buyer, and so let's get to the meat of the argument
debt
here.
Debt buyers don't buy the debt, as I said, to hold it just for the sake of holding it. They buy it to collect it.
I agree, Your Honor, but the question is whether or not they're required to be licensed under the statute, and so the intent of the company is not really relevant here. The question is whether or not the statute requires that they be licensed. And again, I acknowledge that the statute could be clearer, and I think that the legislature could have done a better job last year in amending the statute, but they certainly have made it much clearer than historically it has been. And one point that my colleague keeps ducking is that if the statute has always required the licensing of debt buyers who forward accounts to a law firm for the filing of collection lawsuits, and that's his position, that it's always required such licensing in that circumstance, why why, when the legislature amended the statute, would they give a period of time for debt buyers to come into compliance with the statute. The statute was amended mid-2012 but did not become effective until January 1, 2013. And so
that's what the Illinois Constitution provides.
No, it was a longer...
provides that new legislation becomes effective January 1 of the next year unless the legislature provides otherwise. So when you observe that there was no provision otherwise, you're observing nothing.
Well, Your Honor, I think here, though, we're dealing with just more than that, too. That may be true.
I don't see how you can draw any statute-specific inference from the fact that the legislature has followed the constitutional process.
Okay, Your Honor, I understand the point, but we're dealing with other issues here than just that. That was one issue that I wanted to bring to the court's attention, and I understand now that it did not become effective under the Constitution. I think that they could have provided for an earlier
They
period
could have provided for it. It needs a supermajority vote.
Okay.
And it's extraordinarily rare in Illinois for that to happen.
Okay, but Your Honor, my point is that if they were clarifying the law, it seems to me that the logical approach that the legislature would have taken is not use the default of January 1. And so while I acknowledge,
this is a question of state law, so does the Supreme Court of Illinois attach any significance to the fact that a particular piece of legislation went into force on the constitutional date as opposed to some earlier date?
Again, Your Honor,
see how the Supreme Court of Illinois handles the timing question.
I think it's one point to be made that the legislature,
no,
if they were going...
Look, I asked a specific question about what the Supreme Court of Illinois says about the significance of timing under the Illinois Constitution. Has the Supreme Court of Illinois attached significance to the fact that legislature did or did not adjust the effective date?
Not to my knowledge. I can't cite a case for you right now, Your Honor. But in addition to the fact that they did not set an earlier period of time for it to come into effect, let's look at what they did. And they made significant changes. And that is important here in understanding what the purpose and intent and the meaning of the statute was prior to that amendment. And that's what the district court focused on. If the statute had always applied to debt buyers, why would the legislature simply amend the statute here? It makes no sense.
You're just back to the point without addressing the question about the consequence of the Illinois Constitution.
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor.
I think that's clear.
I understand the point Your Honor was making about the timing and that perhaps there's not much that can be made of the fact.
Look, there are two understandings of the amendment. One is that it establishes a new rule.
Yes.
The other is that it simply rejects the kind of argument you've been making about the meaning of the old rule, right? Clarifies what the law has been all along and prevents future disputes about that. The only argument you have given, at least the only one I understand, for selecting between these interpretations is the timing of the effective date. And I'm trying to figure out whether, as a matter of Illinois law, the timing of the effective date supports such an inference.
I think that the legislature could have said when it passed the statute.
Yeah, you're just not getting it. I'm not asking for your argument. I'm asking for Illinois law on this question.
Okay. Well,
we are mouthpieces of Illinois in cases like this. Have the Illinois courts said that in any case that failure of the legislature to vary the constitutional effective date supports an inference that this was a change in the law as opposed to a clarification, for example?
To that question, I can't point to a case now. I would like to be given the opportunity to supplement, to cite that authority for you.
It's the kind of thing that, if you were going to make this argument, belonged in your brief.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand. I can't cite to you a case at the moment, but again, I could give you that authority on supplemental briefing. The other important change they made, though, and I think that this does help in interpreting what the legislature was attempting to do, is, as my colleague has referenced, they did make some exemptions for debt buyers under the new act. And, Your Honor, if those provisions, which don't apply under the amendment, were indeed applicable prior to the amendment to debt buyers, they would not make any sense. For example, one of the provisions when they amended the statute in 2013, which he said debt buyers are not required to comply with, required that you get approval from the creditor before filing lawsuits. Well, that doesn't make sense if you're the debt buyer and you were required to comply with that provision. Do you need to get something in writing from the creditor? You are the creditor. It's clear when you look at the Illinois Collection Agency Act as a whole, it did not make sense to apply to debt buyers. When they amended the statute, they again took those provisions that didn't make sense to apply to debt buyers, and they said they don't apply to debt buyers. I wanted to ask a little earlier,
the relationship between portfolio and financial.
Yes.
Financial seems to be, that is a registered debt collector.
Yes.
How does portfolio distinguish what goes in which direction?
Separate.
I wondered if first they send it over to financial, and if they don't collect, then do they take those back and then turn them over to the lawyers, or what happens there?
It depends. That could happen, but what's clear is that NCO Portfolio has never engaged in debt collection by sending letters, by making phone calls.
I know, but you got financial doing that.
Or some other company. It could be a non-related entity.
Make it easy. With financial, mm-hmm. they are definitely a debt collector, mm-hmm. and so a lot of the debts are passed over mm-hmm. there. Then going the other direction, Portfolio initiates the collection through an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's where you're saying it falls within the attorney's bailiwick, and therefore it's all the collection efforts are beyond portfolio?
Correct. I mean, the collection then is being undertaken by the exempt law firm, and that's what Hines said, that when the law firm, the attorney, is filing lawsuits, the attorney is engaged in debt collection under the FDCPA. Now, here under the Illinois Collection Agency Act, the attorney has an exemption.
But the Trice case, it seems to imply I'm not sure what it implies.
Let's talk about Trice for a moment. Again, as this court knows, it's not bound to follow that decision if there's a strong indication that the Illinois Supreme Court would not follow the decision. And the district court below found that the Illinois Supreme Court would not follow the decision. The district court focused on the 2013 amendment, and
because they passed that is an admission almost.
That's strong evidence.
No question, it applies now.
Yeah, it's strong evidence that it did not previously apply. And Judge Easterbrook, to your point, we've cited all of that authority in our brief. That when there are substantial revisions to the statute, it's implicit that the legislature meant to make a change. And so we've got that case law in our briefs. Your Honor, unless you have any more questions, I see my time's up.
Few seconds left anyway. Orange is not stopped.
Okay. Your Honor, on the Trice decision, let me just focus on that a bit more. You're not bound to follow that ruling, and again, the 2013 amendments are strong evidence that the statute did not previously apply to debt buyers. And then also, we've got the deposition testimony that the district court noted from the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, where the Daniel Kelber, the senior legal counsel over there, testified that the agency which has regulatory authority over the licensing, has always applied the statute in the way that NCO Portfolio is suggesting that it should be interpreted here.
His testimony was a little bit more equivocal than that.
Well, what he said, Your Honor, is that this is how we've always applied it, and then there was
what he said was, I took a look at the statute once and decided that it didn't apply, and I'm sticking with that, but I might have been wrong.
But
it's
basically
a snapshot of
what he very clearly said is that's how the agency has always interpreted the statute. And when he was offered an alternative suggestion, he said, that's interesting. I might take another look at it, and maybe I would reach a different conclusion. But what he was unequivocal.
Has the Supreme Court of Illinois ever relied for Chevron-ish purposes on a declaration of that sort made in litigation and qualified by the I really don't know very much proviso?
I haven't read every single case involving that issue, Your Honor, and I acknowledge it's not as strong.
All you have to do is find one case where the Supreme Court of Illinois has said that requires the judiciary to defer to this man talking off the top of his head.
What he very clearly said, Your Honor, is that this is how the agency has always applied and interpreted the statute.
I am asking a question about the law of Illinois as represented by the decisions of the Supreme Court. You cannot answer that question by saying such and such a witness clearly said something. Answer that question by telling me what the state judiciary thinks.
I think there are plenty of cases out there, Your Honor, where courts give Chevron deference to a witness that testifies this is how the agency has always applied the
statute. Cite the case you rely most strongly on.
Okay, Your Honor, I think that our district court in ruling.
District courts are not state.
The district court in rendering the decision below, I think, cited.
It is not a state court. Okay, thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Sostrin, anything further?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few things. I think what we really need to do here is just look at the plain language of the Act. Section 3 has specifically and explicitly referred to entities that buy debts and engage in collecting them. And
that but before is 2008, it's really unclear how to reconcile that section with subsection 2.2. And your opposing counsel said that you don't really focus on what the statutory scheme said before the 2008 amendments, and I guess I need a clarification from you. I mean, this litigation is still alive with respect to the time period before 2008.
Right, and Section 3 existed prior to 2008.
I understand that, but it exists in some tension with 2.02 and the exemptions, and the phrase that it purports to be defining is used nowhere else in the Act except with respect to creating a new disorderly conduct crime for acting as a collection agency and doing certain bad things.
I think that prior to 2000, the reason that first of all, the Illinois Supreme Court itself has applied Section 3. The Illinois Appellate Court in Trice applied Section 3 and determined that the debt buyer there was a debt collector.
Now, it cited that. This whole issue is like two sentences in that opinion. I don't know that we can draw a whole lot from that.
Well, I think what you can draw is that the appellate court applied that definition to the activities of the debt buyer and determined that it was required to be licensed.
In a wholly conclusory way, without any analysis of how the statutory sections fit together.
Well, nevertheless, that's still the law in Illinois, and no Illinois court has departed from that. And the district court, as you know, did not have sufficient reason to depart from that, based on the statements of Dan Kelber's deposition in another case, and based on the 2000...
Yeah, I think we've beat that one to death. Okay. Maybe you can address my question about how Section 3 fits with 2.02 prior to 2008.
I think that the Act regulates entities even if they don't meet the definition in Section 2. The Act, as I said, in Section 14, refers to entities that engage in debt collection. It doesn't say a collection agency commits a misdemeanor if it doesn't have a license.
So the penalty provision expands the registration duty, is your position?
the penalty provisions in both Section 14 and Section 4.5 don't require that the entity at issue be a collection agency under Section 2. And the Act, therefore, regulates entities that engage in debt collection, even if they don't meet that definition. And Section 3's purpose is to explain in what circumstances people are acting as collection agencies, even if they don't meet the requirement of Section 2. And that's what Section 3 is for. And this is a consumer protection.
How do we reconcile that with the exemption provision, 2.03, which says that the Act does not apply to entities that are in other lines of business?
Well, Section 2, again, exempt entities from the entire regulation of the Act, not just the definition of collection agency in Section 2. It applies to the entire Act. And this is a consumer protection statute, which is, and it explicitly provides that it shall be liberally construed to meet its purpose. And that purpose is to protect consumers.
The last refuge of anyone who can't explain the statute.
Well, again, I think that the plain language of the Act explicitly refers to debt buying. If Section 3 is meaningless, then it wouldn't be in there at all. It regulates entities that buy debts.
A version of Judge Sykes' question, which continues to bug me. There's no statutory definition of the phrase engages in debt collection. Is there any administrative regulation or an administrative, formal administrative definition of the phrase engages in debt collection?
Not that I'm aware of, but the Act since 2008 has defined debt collection. And that definition is very broad.
But engages in is the critical phrase in both 2 and 3. And the question about whether entity A, who hires entity B to collect debts, engages in debt collection is the core question. That's why I wonder whether there's a formal definition, but you say no.
Well, and I'm not aware of any regulatory authority on that issue. But
okay, well, if there's nothing, there's nothing. That's just life.
But I think if we focus on the fact that they were the plaintiff in their lawsuits, in their thousands of lawsuits.
Yes, I think we have your position, counsel.
Thank you very much.
And the case is taken under advisement.